David and Goliath, right? Pretty much all of us could just stand up here and talk about the story of David and Goliath. Goliath, of course, the Philistine giant, defies the armies of the living God. And here's young David, the shepherd boy, with a great deal of courage, defends the honor of God. He comes out with his slingshot, you know, and lets it go and right between the eyes. And Goliath is dead. And we learn a lot of lessons from that story, don't we? It's the basis of dozens, I suppose, of sermonettes and sermons. And we tell the story over and over and over again, and even our little children can tell you the story of David and Goliath. Well, why don't our children know about the amazing courage and honor of Abishai, Sibbecai, Elhanan, and John? Why don't they know that the stories about these men? And your first reaction, like mine, would be, who? Who are they? Never heard of them. Well, believe it or not, these four men did exactly the same thing as David. What? Check my Bible. Yeah, they did. They did. Each one of them slew a Philistine giant. In fact, each one of them slew four of the immediate family members of Goliath. Now, we're going to look at that. But unless you're a real Bible scholar, you probably never heard of them. Yeah? You ever hear of them? Maybe you have. I hadn't, actually. But I found out about them. Now, we don't tell their heroic tale to our children. But we're going to tell their tale today. So we're going to notice in 2 Samuel, verse 21. We're going to notice a brief story of four men who, just like David, stood up against the Philistine giant alone and who were apparently helpless to do anything about this, helpless to accomplish the feat of standing up against the giant, but they did it anyway. We're going to see what we today, then, as Christians, can learn from their example about their story that has faded into the obscure pages of the Bible that we rarely ever refer to. Their story is recorded for us in two parallel places. It's in 2 Samuel chapter 21 and also in 1 Chronicles chapter 20. The parallel chapters. In 2 Samuel 21, it'll be verse 15 through 22. In 1 Chronicles 20, it's verses 4 through 8. Now, I'm going to read the accounts in these sections as we tell the story, starting first with 2 Samuel chapter 21 and verse 15. And so it's when the Philistines were at war again with Israel, David and his servants with him went down and fought against the Philistines. And David grew faint. And then in 1 Chronicles 20, it says just this. Now it happened afterward that war broke out at Gezer with the Philistines. It just tells where it is. Now it seems Israel is always at war with the Philistines. Why in the world didn't that stop? Especially after Goliath. Why didn't it stop? Why couldn't the Israelites conquer and vanquish this constant enemy? Always coming after them, the Philistines. And David here is now beginning to show his age. He tires easily. And it seems he just wasn't up to the struggle anymore. And we see David grew faint. He grew tired. And does that not sound like all of us sometimes? We grow weary. We grow tired of struggling. Time and time and time again. It seems like you've been fighting that same enemy year after year, and that enemy just won't quit, won't give up. Maybe when you were younger at one time, maybe whatever your enemy is, maybe you thought you really dealt it quite a death blow, and it was going to be over with. Just like David when he's young, slew the giant Goliath. And all Israel thinks the war is won. Everything's going to be fine. We're going to have peace. From now on, you're victorious. Now, look what I've done. Look what I've been able to accomplish. I can do anything. Look at the strength I've got. Look what God has given me. I can conquer any foe. I can win any battle. But they just keep coming. More Philistines. They keep coming year after year. Why can't we have peace? Why do we have to keep on fighting? You know, just like David fighting the Philistines, We realize that we're at war also. We're called soldiers, Christian soldiers. And it seems that our warfare never ends. Let's go to 2 Corinthians chapter 10. You want to keep your place here in Samuel if you want to, because we'll be back. But 2 Corinthians 10 describes our war in verse 3, "For though we walk in the flesh," and of course we do, we're just walking around, we're not spirit beings just yet. And Godspeed, today we will be. "But though we walk in the flesh," that's not where our war is. We don't go out here and go to battle. We're not in the military. We don't war according to the flesh. "The weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but they are mighty in God for pulling down strongholds." The Philistines seemed to have a stronghold over the Israelites, didn't they? With God's help, you can pull those down. "Casting down arguments and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God." We heard about that as well, you know, like evolution exalts itself against the knowledge of God and tries to palm the things off and counterfeit God's way of life. "But instead, we are then to bring every thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ." So, for a long time, we've been fighting a spiritual war, however long that's been since the day that God called us, been fighting that war. And, of course, our enemy, as we see here, is spiritual. It's Satan, the devil. And we've struggled against him. He is quite an adversary. But we went to war against him. And we determined, at one time, we determined, we're going to win this war. No matter what, we're going to win. But we seemed so weak, didn't we? Compared to this adversary, I mean, this great archangel, he was so awesome. He was the great cherub that covered, at one time, Lucifer became Satan. But look how much power he has. He can go throughout this universe. He's eternal. And we're weak and puny human beings. What were we? What could we do? How could we possibly conquer evil? How could we conquer sin? How could we fight against this evil, satanic world that we're a part of? We began to learn that everything we'd come out of in regards to this world, our past beliefs, our way of life, our values, all these things that we came out of were represented by this adversary. Satan the devil. We come out of Satan's world. And so one day, as we began to realize that, and where we were living, that we were in Satan's world, he's the god of this world, as we began to realize that one day, we said, we're going to take the battle to this adversary. And so we said, I'm going to be baptized. I'm going to be baptized. And we felt, we have now taken it to our enemy. We have killed our enemy. We have overcome the evil one. We're baptized. We have won. We are victorious. And as we came up out of that baptismal tank, if someone was watching, they hugged us and they congratulated us and they said, "Isn't it wonderful?" And we said, "Yes, I've done it." But there were more battles to fight. The war wasn't over yet. The enemy was not dead. It was as if the enemy had sons. Kept coming back. And so we needed to summon the courage and the determination to continue the fight. It wasn't over yet. It was going to actually last the rest of our lives. And we had to determine that. 2 Samuel again, now verse 21, or chapter 21. Verse 16. Now this particular part of it is only recorded in 2 Samuel. So we'll just read it here. We're introduced to Ishbi-Benob. Was one of the sons of the giants. So he's now the Philistine champion. Okay, he's, if you will, replaced Goliath. It says he's one of the sons of the giants, at least a descendant. And it says the weight of whose bronze spear was 300 shekels. Wow, isn't that impressive? 300 shekels! There was I don't know how big that is. 8 pounds. He holds a spear, 8 pounds, okay? Who was bearing also a new sword, and he thought he could kill David. So Ishbi-Benob, this giant guy, he's got a big spear, thinks he can kill David. Now, remember, he probably thought David was wounded, because what did we already read? David was faint. Perhaps David had fainted. So he thinks now, here's this great opportunity for me to become famous, because I'm going to kill the famous King David who slew Goliath. It'll be my turn to kill him. But Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, or whatever, came to his aid and he struck the Philistine and killed him. Now, Abishai is like King David's chief of staff, right-hand man. He looks after him. So, while Ishbi-Benob here, you know, get the story, is racing forward now to thrust his spear, or this 8-pound, 300 shekel, whatever it is, sword into King David, Abishai reacts now in a split second, and he holds up his shield and he blocks the spear from hitting King David, and David's protected. And he gets out of the way, but now this enrages Ishbi-Benob. He is so mad. So what is he going to do now? He picks up his spear, and he's going to throw it at Abishai, this little runt of a guy compared to him. Gets ready to throw it at him. But the advantage goes to the swift and to the small sometimes. And he's able to dart out of the way and instead take his sword and reach around and stab Ishbi-Benob, and he died. He killed him. So the Philistine giant, or the Philistines, see their great giant champion has been killed. And once again, they head for home. They flee, and they wonder what has happened to their giant. So again, the second time now, after David and Goliath, a small man defeats a giant of an enemy who would dare strike at the king of Israel. And the men around King David now are rather concerned for their aging king, and they say to him, the men of David swore to him, saying, "You shall go out no more with us to battle, lest you quench the lamp of Israel." The colorful way of saying, David, you're just not up to the battle anymore. We don't want you to die, because you're the light of Israel. So you stay home from now on. We'll take care of business. So, do you think perhaps God was instrumental in helping Abishai defeat Ishbi-Benob? You think that he was involved? Ishbi-Benob looks at David, thinks he's helpless, thinking David is physically weak, helpless. But who is with David? Well, I'm not meaning God. God was with him. But who is with David? This weak, puny little fellow of the guard, in comparison, named Abishai. Logically speaking, it would have been impossible for this man to have defeated this massive giant, Ishbi-Benob. It'd be like a 4-foot, 8-inch, 110-pound horse jockey going against one of these big NFL players, you know, 6'3", 325 pounds. Yeah. Not much of a contest. But that's kind of like what it would have been like. Abishai was not going to win without some help. So, why didn't Abishai make the logical conclusion by looking at the evidence, making a judgment here? I better run. I'm going to lose. He didn't do that. Why did he keep fighting for his king despite the overwhelming evidence that he was going to die in the process? What are we learning from this that we can apply to our lives today? What are we learning? Let's continue the story. Verse 18. We're still in 2 Samuel now. Verse 18. Story's not over. Now it happened afterward. We don't know exactly how much afterward is, but it happened afterward that there was again a battle with the Philistines at Gob. Funny place. Then Sibbecai the Hushathite kills Saph. Okay, I wish I could have names, Bob, George, Sam, you know, whatever, but Sibbecai the Hushathite kills Saph, who was one of the sons of the giant. And the account then over in 1 Chronicles 20 just says this: at which time Sibbecai the Hushathite killed Sippai. Sippai, I thought it was Saph. Okay, the guy's got two names. That's all there is to it. That's not that hard. He's just got two names. It's the same guy. But Sippai, or Saph, who was one of the sons of the giant? And it goes on to tell us a little bit of a fact here. And they were subdued. Amazingly enough, the Philistines seem to never give up. They again sent their giant champion against Israel. This time his name is Saph, or Sippai. Again, apparently a son of Goliath. Now, King David, he's not on the scene there. He's not allowed to fight anymore. They've got him back to the old folks' home. So, in this case, Sibekai steps forward and takes care of business. And we really have no other details about this battle, except what was recorded here. But apparently, once again, over impossible odds, no doubt with God's direct intervention, the giant is once again killed. And notice the result. The Philistines are subdued. What does that mean? Other translations put this as they were humbled in their defeat. Humbled in their defeat. Clearly, God is showing His power to defeat strong enemies, even when it seems absolutely impossible to do so. All right, back to 2 Samuel 21, verse 19. Once again, there is war at Gob with the Philistines. You'd have thought they could at least found a different place to go to battle. They have the same place. The Philistines can't learn. Where now, Elhanan, the son of Jair, Oregon, the Bethlehemite, kills the brother of Goliath, the Gittite, the shaft of whose spear was like a weaver's beam. Must have lived in Weaverville. That's just up the road, if you know. Yeah, okay. Yeah. 1 Chronicles 20, verse 5, the other account of this, one verse. Again, there was war with the Philistines, and Elhanan, the son of Jair, I like it here, J-A-I-R, it's all you got, kills Lami, that's his name, the giant is named here, the brother of Goliath, the Gittite, the shaft of whose spear was like a weaver's beam. Okay, now, how big is a weaver's beam? Not too many of us know that. Well, I love the computer. You can look up anything. So I looked up how big is a weaver's beam. Sure enough, it tells us. The spear would have been 3 inches in diameter. Okay? It was probably 6 or 7 feet long. And the spearhead was 15 pounds. Now, how big was the other guy's spear? It was little, like 8 pounds, wasn't it? This is almost double the size. We're talking about a massive weapon here that this guy has. This guy, Lami. So, again, the size, we talked about it again in the early sermon, about, you know, standing on my head. What's he, 9 feet tall, 10 feet tall? Massive, giant. So, very few details, again, are provided here. But I think the question that we all got to come away with this is, what's wrong with the Philistines? Why can't they learn? Why can't they learn their lesson? Stop sending their giants, their champions, after the Israelites. Because they're going to get killed. It's happened time and time again. And yet they do. And once again, we have an unknown man here, barely mentioned in the Bible, Elhanan, displaying incredible courage and trust in God to slay Lami, described here as the brother of Goliath, not a son in this case, but evidently still very much a Goliath-like giant, at least closely related to Goliath. But we're seeing a repetitive action, getting the same result. Isn't that the definition of insanity? Keep doing the same thing? God demonstrating, though, over and over again, that despite the continuing attacks by these giants, He is going to defend Israel. That's His people. The seemingly helpless, defenseless men going to be used to accomplish this miraculous task of slaying the giants. We're not done yet, are we? Let's go back to 2 Samuel 21. 2 Samuel 21. Yet again, there was war at Gath. It was probably at Gob, I don't know. Wherever it was, but up in the Philistine territory. Where there was a man of great stature. It doesn't really say how tall, but he's a big guy, great stature, who has 6 fingers on each hand, 6 toes on each foot, 24 in number, and he was also born to the giant. Again, is this a son? Yeah. Notice this. So when he defied Israel, Jonathan, I called him John, Jonathan, the son of Shimei, David's brother, killed him. So this is a nephew of David, killed him. The account is over in 1 Chronicles 21, 6, but it's repeated almost word for word. So we're not going to take the time to go over there and look at it. It's almost word for word. There are a couple of things to notice about this particular giant. Once again, he's a giant, but he's a bit of an oddity. And how many fingers am I holding up? Five? No, six. Look again. Yeah. Six fingers, six toes. So perhaps the Philistines thought that this massive giant with all the extra fingers and toes, perhaps he had the superpowers of the gods because he was so odd, so different. And now they were finally going to be able to defeat Israel with this monster, if you will. Perhaps they thought the Israelites would be truly fearful of this freak of nature, who was also, again, a giant. But let's notice also something else, specifically what it says that he did. It says that he defied Israel and Israel's God. Now, perhaps the other giants did too, but it's not specifically mentioned. Except in the original story, back to David and Goliath, what did Goliath do? He defied the armies of the living God. David didn't take that too well. That was really the catalyst. Well, here, Jonathan, same thing. He's not going to let that happen. He is not going to let this giant with all the toes and fingers defy God or defy Israel. So notice that we read, he didn't even begin to take action until that happened, until this unnamed giant defies Israel, and by so doing, he defies God, and he says, this will stop. And again, we can conclude that Jonathan was no match, physically speaking, for this giant. He was probably just some average-sized man. How could he have had the courage to face that giant? Perhaps it's because he knew his recent history. You suppose the other fellows had come back and told what they did? Didn't the Israelites know what had happened in previous times? Obviously so. He had seen God's hand evident in helping other men slay the previous giants that had also been sent against Israel. And perhaps he had the faith that God would do so yet again and give him the strength to conquer this giant enemy. And so with that, we're left to study this, to think about this, and ask some questions. Have we seen the evidence? Do we know God will intervene for us and give us the strength to conquer our giant spiritual enemies that we have? Have we ever seen God fight for us before? Have we seen evidence of God intervening in our lives, fighting our battles for us before, delivering us from our enemies? What are the things we need to fight against the enemies that we have that seem to keep coming back to attack us time and time and time again? What do we need? Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 10. Very familiar scriptures for us. Finally, my brethren. You probably know this by heart. Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of His might. There's our strength. There's our source of strength. We can't have the strength on our own. It says for us, and it says, finally, like, I want you to get this. This is so important. Be strong in God and the power of His might. So put on the whole armor, not part of it, put on the whole armor of God so that you might be able to stand against your enemy, the tricks, the wiles, the deceit of the devil. For we are not wrestling against a man. You don't wrestle against flesh and blood, but these are spiritual, against principalities, powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this age, against spiritual hosts of wickedness in heavenly places. So take up the whole armor of God so that you might be able to withstand in the evil day that we're living in. We are living in evil days. And having done everything we can, we will stand. So clearly we need to recognize the source of our spiritual problems that comes from Satan the devil, and then use the spiritual armor described here that God gives us to guard against the continuous attacks of the devil. Just like these giants, you know, Satan the devil is not going to give up. He's kind of, if you will, insane. He keeps doing the same thing over and over and going to get the same results. But he thinks he can win. What have we noticed in the story of the slaying of the four giants of the Philistines that we also have to apply as we fight our spiritual battles? There's a specific lesson that we need to get at here as we consider this story. And I believe that point is that we have to also be courageous and trust God, and sometimes we have to go on the offensive. Sometimes we just have to take the battle to our enemy and destroy him again and again and again and again. Why does the enemy keep coming at us? Why does he continue to attack us the very same way, seems like, time after time? In the same places. He comes and fights the battles again in the same... I've been there before. I fought this battle before at the same location. It was at Gob. I've been here before. I've got to fight it again. Why does he do that? Perhaps our enemy thinks that we'll get tired and we'll grow weary of the battle and that we'll just give up and say it's hopeless. So we need to ask, who are our giants? Or what are our giants? And who cares whether you slay them or not? Who's ever going to notice anyway? Just like these giant slayers, hidden away in the obscure chapters of 2 Samuel and 1 Chronicles, that you probably can't even remember their names by now. Who's going to know the courage it took for you to fight your spiritual battles? Who's going to know what you went through? Well, God knows. And God will notice. Perhaps one day you'll find your story has been written down for other people to read about someday. I doubt if Elhanan and Jonathan and Sibbecai ever had any idea that we'd be talking about them some 3,000 years later. As a congregation, there are many giants out there among us, aren't there? And some of them have attacked you time and time again, haven't they? And perhaps you thought your giant was slain and gone for good on the day that you were baptized. Perhaps you're surprised that these giants keep coming back to try to destroy you over and over again. What are some of the giants that we face? Well, some of the giants we face include extended health problems. We just heard about one today. And the problem that she's facing today, that's a giant, isn't it? She's facing it. Financial difficulties, family problems, relationship problems, problems over getting your feelings hurt, being offended, giants of anger and bitterness. All these things can be giants in our lives, and they keep coming back, it seems, time and time again. Perhaps your giant is a lack of trust. Maybe you feel betrayed and continue to feel betrayed and let down by others. I'm never going to let that happen again. Never going to let myself go there again. That's happened one too many times. I'm never going to trust any man again. I'm certainly never going to trust any organization again. Because your trust is broken and that's become a giant for you. Other things are giants because we're simply afraid of them. The things that simply cause us to be afraid, whether it's logical or not, but yet we find we're afraid of it. I know that I had to face a fear one time. Maybe you'll be surprised. One of the fears I had to face, probably my greatest giant, I was scared to death to give an opening or closing prayer at church. I couldn't do it. Couldn't do it. Made me physically sick to even think about it. And I still struggle. But here I am giving a sermon to you today and mentioning it. Who would have thought? Couldn't have told me that 30 years ago. But you see, giants can be slain, can't they? We can slay giants. Some of you guys, what about the first time you were ever asked to give a sermonette? That can be pretty frightening. Lead songs, whatever. What are some other giants that we face? What's keeping us from growing spiritually? Perhaps your fear is meeting new people. Perhaps your fear is extending hospitality, opening up, letting people get to know you. What other fears might we have? Are we afraid to fail? Are we afraid of being embarrassed? Speaking of being afraid to give an opening or closing prayer, I was embarrassed that I would forget what to say. Are we afraid of being rejected by someone? And things like this can be as huge as giants before us, and we're afraid. But are we too afraid to face these fears? Or are we going to learn to be strong and courageous and look our fears right in the eye and say, I'm going to overcome this. With God's help, I know I can. Have we forgotten what God said to Joshua as Joshua was facing his giant? He had some pretty big shoes to fill, didn't he? Joshua chapter 1. He had to replace Moses as the leader of the Israelites. And God gave him some encouragement as he started that job. In Joshua chapter 1, I think it's important that we read this in verse 5. Joshua chapter 1, verse 5. No man shall be able to stand before you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with you. We have to take this to heart. You see, don't just think, well, that's Joshua. Put your name here. Put your name here. So I will be with you. I will not leave you. I will not forsake you. Be strong and of good courage. For to this people you shall divide and inheritance the land. Verse 7. Only be strong and very courageous, so that you may observe to do all according to the law which Moses my servant commanded you. Don't turn from it to the right or left, so that you might prosper. The book of the law shall not depart from your mouth. You shall meditate on it day and night, so that you might observe to do all according that's written in it. For then they will make your way prosperous, and you will have good success. Have I not commanded you? Be strong and of good courage. That's the third time he says that. Don't be afraid. Don't be dismayed. For the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. All the while you are fighting your giants, the Lord is with you. God is with you. You suppose David's men knew this? You suppose they'd heard the story about Joshua and what God did for him? About fighting the battle of Jericho? Had they learned from Joshua about King David? Do you suppose these mighty men here, Sipachi, Elhanan, Abishai, John, you suppose they knew what David had done to Goliath through the power of God? Yeah, it hadn't happened very long ago. I think they knew. So did they have the faith that God would also deliver them too? Now, practically nobody remembers these men who did the almost exact same thing as David with Goliath. The names of these giant killers are not commonly known, but they faced what should have been certain death. Logically speaking, they would have been killed and found the courage to trust in God and slay their giants. They had a great example to follow in their king and in their leader in battle, King David. And perhaps their courage came from believing that God would surely help their noble cause, because after all, the Philistines did defy Israel and God, and that God would be with them just as he was with King David. Maybe they had faith in that. Where's our courage going to come from? Slay our giants. Who's our example that should teach us that we also can have great faith and great courage to once again take up the sword and go into battle once again, even though we might be very tired? Once again, take up the sword of battle, march right back out there and destroy those giants one more time. Have we ever considered the example and the courage of Jesus Christ, whose faith we follow, whose example we follow? Can we not learn from the examples of Abishai, Sibachai, Elhanan, and John that we cannot give up? They didn't. We have to keep fighting our giants, even though they, or their brothers, or their sons, whatever our giants are, those giants keep attacking us again and again. Sometimes in the same ways, the same places. Satan's not going to give up. just like the Philistines. Your battles are not over, and you can expect your giant, whatever it is, will rise up again and still keep trying. Are you going to get discouraged? Or are you going to determine to keep fighting, no matter what it takes to keep fighting and defeating your enemy? You're going to keep going. What was it that Paul said right before he died? This is recorded for us there in 2 Timothy 4. It says, I fought the good fight. He had to keep fighting his giants. He had a lot of giants to face, didn't he? Over and over, I fought the good fight. I've finished the race. I kept the faith. After the news came to King David for that fourth time that yet again a Philistine giant from Gath had been slain by one of his mighty men in a miraculous manner, David realized what was going on. He realized how God was continuing to offer his blessings and his protection. And as a result, he sat down and he wrote a song. It's one of the songs that we sing in our hymn book all the time. It says, Thee will I love, O Lord, my might, my rock, my help, my saving power, my God, my trust, my shield in fight, my great salvation, my high tower. To the eternal is my prayer, to whom all praise we owe, and so shall I, by his watchful care, safely be guarded from my foes. So, brother, let's trust God. Let's be filled with courage, and let's go out there and slay some giants.